You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This morning I spoke to ACT Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden. We began by talking about the preliminary results of the End of Life Choice referendum. 65.2% of New Zealanders voted in favour of the law change, pending obviously the special votes being announced this Friday. Even in the lead-up to the election, the polling was quite convincing in favour of the end-of-life choice bill. So I began by asking Brooke whether, despite this, she ever had any doubts.
Well, I always had doubts that there was a very well-coordinated campaign of fear, uncertainty and doubt, led by some pretty vocal opponents. But having had over 20 years of polling that showed over 60% of New Zealanders had consistently wanted an End-of-Life Choice Act made me very confident that it would actually pass in the end, but we were certainly up against a lot of very vocal opposition.
Yeah, and that's what I actually wanted to talk about, because there were some very sophisticated campaigns against the bill. How did you tackle that? Did you choose to engage with those fears they were raising?
No, we played a very fair campaign and just stuck to the facts, and I think people saw through that. I mean, there were billboards up and down New Zealand saying this Act, once it's legal, will allow people to have assisted dying without parental consent. But I think people saw through that fear and uncertainty that it was supposed to create, because of course the law only applies to people who are over the age of 18 anyway. So they were trying to tap into people's fears, but I think on the whole most New Zealanders saw through it and saw the law for what it was.
Yeah, and I think you're right. A lot of people did see through those particular campaigns, but I do know that an opinion that carried a lot of weight with a lot of New Zealanders was hearing the opposition from a large portion of the medical community.
Yeah, so I think there was a problem there in that there are a lot of doctors that I spoke to who did support end-of-life choice, but they weren't willing to say it publicly because it was an illegal act. And I can completely understand that rationale, because if it didn't pass as a law, you wouldn't necessarily have wanted to be the doctor who went out and said that they were wanting this law change. So there is going to be a bit of a traditional element and fear of being that person who is speaking out in the community. But certainly, even in the last few days, once it's passed, I've been surprised at the number of doctors who have come up and said that they voted for it. And so I think there was a little bit of hesitancy to express their views vocally, but I think there's going to be quite a few doctors who'll come out in the coming weeks and years saying that they would be actually willing to do it.
Because, yeah, how would that affect the operation of the bill if we do have doctors who aren't willing to partake?
Well, one of the really important elements of the End of Life Choice Act is that anyone can conscientiously object, so there will be doctors who won't want to have anything to do with it, and that is completely their right. But we know from surveys that have been done over the last few years that there are still a few thousand doctors in New Zealand who'd be willing to participate. And that would actually mean that the law could work in practice, because you need two independent doctors. And with the numbers that I've seen, it shows that it could actually work as a fully functioning model.
Just lastly, even after the result, we're still hearing from those groups speaking out about there not being enough safeguards around the bill. Is there anything that you regret in terms of the safeguards that were written into the bill?
No, I don't regret any of them at all. This law took 5 years to be worked through, and it was one of the largest consultations with the public in parliamentary history. It has been thrashed out, and it is a very, very safe piece of law. I have gone through years of discussion with people who oppose assisted dying, and they talk about the safeguards being inadequate. And yet there is no number of safeguards that you could put into a bill like this that would make them support it. So I just question why they don't want to support it, and it's definitely not because of the safeguards.
In the second half of my interview this morning with ACT Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden, we spoke about the party's recent call to abolish the Human Rights Commission, calling it a hard-left organisation masquerading as a government department. The Human Rights Commission is an independent Crown entity formed in 1977 under the Human Rights Act. Last Thursday, 95BFM producer Jessica Hopkins spoke to Chief Human Rights Officer Paul Hunt in response to the ACT Party's claim and about the importance of human rights in New Zealand. Here's a snippet of that interview here.
My response is that it's a free country. The ACT Party will express its views. That's how democracy works, and what the Human Rights Commission is endeavouring to do is to fulfil what it's been asked to do by the New Zealand Parliament. And what we're really trying hard to do is to make human rights meaningful and relevant and practical to the everyday lives of everybody. So far from being sort of out of step with New Zealand and not engaging with realities, we are actually saying that human rights can improve workplaces, human rights can improve universities, human rights can improve schools and our environment and our communities. So we are really listening carefully to communities, trying to respect what we're hearing and trying to ensure that the promises made by successive governments are respected.
You can find that full interview as a podcast on the 95BFM website. Now, Justice spokesperson for the National Party, Simon Bridges, told News Hub he agrees that the Human Rights Commission is too sympathetic to issues promoted by the political left, but would not go so far as to abolish the body, instead reforming it to focus on what he calls genuine human rights issues. Golwiz Karaman, the Green Party's human rights spokesperson, says this shows just how far ACT has moved to the extreme right, calling it bizarre that a party that campaigns on the protection of freedoms wants to abolish a commission which is aimed at protecting them. She notes the Human Rights Commission is important to advocate for the rights of minority groups, such as the disabled community and the rainbow community. Now, human rights aren't inherently a left-wing issue. In fact, as Gariman highlights, there are certain rights which ACT is undeniably the biggest champions for, such as freedom of expression and the right to a dignified death, which was the entire basis for the End of Life Choice Bill. However, the ACT party cites policies such as a living wage, raising benefits and an extra public holiday, as well as hate speech laws, as examples of the Commission's left-leaning tendencies. I therefore began by asking Brooke whether ACT was really opposed to the Commission itself or just the politicisation of the role and the certain rights it chooses to promote.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, human rights have existed before the Human Rights Commission was established. So getting rid of it doesn't get rid of the human rights itself. But what we've seen in the last few years is a human rights commissioner actively going out there and politicising the role of the Human Rights Commissioner and talking about things like putting in place new public holidays rather than actively campaigning to try and help human rights issues when they arise in the community. And I know from David Seymour, he's had a number of constituents who have wanted help from the Human Rights Commission that still haven't actually had that help. And at that same time, we've got the Human Rights Commissioner going out there and saying that we need new laws and we need new public holidays. And I think, you know, that's an agenda that the Human Rights Commission shouldn't be adopting. They should be actively helping and seeking people help in the community.
Is this a reason, I guess, to abolish the role entirely, or do we just need stricter rules about the apolitical nature of the role?
We definitely need the Human Rights Commissioner to take a less politicised approach. But I think there is an element that, you know, the role of what the Human Rights Commission ought to be doing can be taken up by local MPs, good people of the community, who actively want to help their citizens and can point them in the right direction for the help that they need. At the moment, that's what the Human Rights Commission should be doing, but is not doing. So I think if they can't actually do the job that they've been set out to do now, there's no real need to try and reform them. We should just get rid of them.
Does ACT have any proposition for a body that would replace it instead, or who would undertake that role? I guess you were just saying the MPs.
Yeah, I mean, there are a certain number of organisations in our communities that do actively help people, like you've obviously got the courts and you've got Citizens Advice Bureau, but you do have politicians whose roles should be to be active in the community and helping people where they feel like they've been failed by the law. And we do need to be having good local MPs active in the community. And I think with the Human Rights Commissioner politicising his role, I think there is an element of what is the Human Rights Commission there to achieve At the moment, it seems to be trying to push a left-wing agenda rather than helping the community, and I think there's no need for it anymore.
Some things, though, that they are pushing for, such as healthy homes, I mean, that's not an undeniably left-wing sort of thing and is in line with a lot of our international obligations.
Yeah, but there's a lot of ways that you can go about solving the issue. You know, the ACT Party doesn't say that we shouldn't have healthy homes. But what ends up happening is when people are talking about healthy homes, fair pay, employment agreements, benefit increases, more public holidays, it's starting to push an agenda of state intervention, as opposed to allowing more freedom in people's lives. So we're not opposed to the concept. We're opposed to the way that the Human Rights Commission wants to go about it, which is through more state intervention.
Another major issue that has recently been going on in the Human Rights Commission, which ACT is opposed to, is the introduction of hate speech laws.
So the issue of hate speech is really... it's a minority rights issue, freedom of speech versus hate speech, and we have to draw a line somewhere. The issue is that currently the Human Rights Commission is calling for that line to be moved away from where it currently is. And I think there is an element that we have to be really wary of, which is policing what people are thinking and what people are saying. Because I think we have a fear of pushing people with radical views further underground than allowing people to say things in the open.
Yeah, I guess the issue that often comes up with freedom of speech defences, though, isn't it that freedom of speech is meant to protect the right to speak out against the government? So censoring hate speech against another individual isn't necessarily an encroachment on that, right?
We should always have a law that protects people against violence and against people inciting hatred and violence against a person. What we don't want is a subjective line to be drawn where it's based on opinion and where someone's opinion could be deemed hate speech because of the subjective nature of whether that person who was on the receiving end finds it offensive or not. Because it's such an easy line that can be swung in so many ways. What is offensive to one person could be unoffensive to another person. We have to be making sure that these are objective hate speech laws, not subjective ones.
I can definitely understand the other concerns around that subjective nature of it, because I even think Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern even spoke out saying, you know, the kind of speech we're talking about is the sort of stuff, when you see it, you know it sort of thing, which seems like a dangerous basis to make laws on, something that subjective. But it does seem like there can be lines practically drawn, and I think the quote that I often come back to, which is actually in relation to religious freedom, but actually kind of applies to freedom of expression too, or freedom of speech, is that religious freedom exists so that people of faith aren't persecuted, but it shouldn't guarantee them the right to persecute others. And that's Max Tweedy who says that. And I guess for freedom of speech, if your only purpose of speaking is to deny the humanity of another person, then why should that speech be protected?
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting that this government, I think it was last year or the year before, got rid of our blasphemy law, because it had deemed it outdated. You know, this idea that you could make a satirical argument or statement against someone's religion. And we got rid of that because we thought it was an outdated law. And now the government is turning around and saying, well, maybe we need to protect people even further in what thoughts people say to them. So I think it's a really interesting dynamic there, and we have to question why it's being brought about. But also realising that, yes, we do need to protect people from incitement to violence and being on the receiving end of that. But that is where it can be proved and where it is an objective fact. We should never be going out there and saying that someone should be policed and punished for a subjective opinion.
That was ACT Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden speaking about the party's call to abolish the Human Rights Commission.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.